We have a very special guest today. He is the best-selling author and the founder and chairman of the Children's Health Defense and co-counsel of the Monsanto Roundup litigation. From 1986 to 2017, he served as the senior attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council and was the chief prosecuting attorney for Hudson Riverkeeper. He is also a professor emeritus of environmental law at Pace University School of Law. His latest book, The Real Anthony Fauci, here it is currently number one on the USA Today's book list, also on Amazon.com, but suspiciously number seven on the New York Times bestseller list, which is weird. Please welcome Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Jimmy.
So this book is mind-blowing. It's jaw-dropping, all the things I can say about it. You open up to any part of this book and start reading, and I guarantee you it will make you angry about the state of our country and our healthcare system and our culture. So let me just ask you, what made you... Now, you knew... You were personal family friends with Dr. Fauci, correct? What led you to write this book?
Well, I wouldn't say I was ever personal family friends, but my family had, members of my family had interactions with him because my family is so deeply enmeshed in public health in this country because of our, you know, the long-term interest in intellectual disabilities and in other areas and you know, in all kinds of disabilities. So I knew Tony Fauci. I knew of him my whole life. I knew who he was in terms of, I've been on the vaccine issue since 2005. I've watched his villainy in that issue, and I recognize, and the reason I wrote the book, Jimmy, is because so many Americans were looking at Tony Fauci as this kind of savior, this avuncular, science-based, steady hand who had been a health official, public servant for five decades, who had advised six presidents, and was kind of the guy, the man on the white horse, or the white lab coat, as it were, who would, you know, ride us out of this coronavirus crisis. And I knew from the beginning that this was a case of mistaken identity, that he does not do public health, and he has not done public health since the 1980s. He has transformed that agency into an incubator for pharmaceutical products. He does, his agency, he is the architect of agency capture, not just at NIH or NIAID, but across all of HHS. What they do is they promote pharmaceutical products, they promote the profiteering by the pharmaceutical industry. They promote their own personal power. And he is the leader of that pack. He took that agency, which is supposed to do research on chronic disease and infectious disease, the etiology of those diseases, to figure out what are the environmental causes of those diseases. Why are we in the middle of an epidemic for autism right now, for example? Why is it that autism went from 1 in 10,000 in my generation to 1 in every 34 kids in my children's generation? Why did food allergies suddenly appear in 1989? Peanut allergies that we never heard of and now are ubiquitous. Why did rheumatoid arthritis, juvenile diabetes, all these autoimmune diseases suddenly go epidemic in 1989? Why did all the neurodevelopmental diseases that we never heard of as a kid, ADD, ADHD, Tourette syndrome, tics, narcolepsy, ASD, sleep disorder, why did they suddenly become ubiquitous? When Tony Fauci came in, 6% of American children had chronic disease. By 2006, 54% had it. We went from being the healthiest country in the world with the healthiest children to the sickest. Literally, we do not even qualify as a developed nation anymore. We are 79th in the world behind Nicaragua and Costa Rica in terms of our health outcomes. And why did that happen? Well, the one figure who is more responsible for that than anybody else in the world is Tony Fauci. He is the reason we take more pharmaceutical drugs than any other nation in the world, three times the average in the Western countries. We pay the highest prices and we have the worst health outcomes. And that, you know, is at, as I show in the book, all of that is at Tony Fauci's door. He has consistently failed upward. If you won't ask Tony Fauci what his greatest success story is, he'll talk about drug promotion. He'll say, we developed this vaccine, or we got AZT into 500,000 people. He won't say that that human health has increased or deaths have dropped from HIV or anything like that. He will tell you how many drugs that he sold. And he develops drugs instead of using the money, that the $7.6 billion a year budget, more than a half a trillion that we've given him in total, instead of using that to determine, you know, what are the healthy, what are the environmental exposures that are causing all of these chronic disease outbreaks, he uses that budget to develop new drugs, which he then farms out to the universities, and he shares the patents with them, and then he sells them to the drug companies and splits the patents with them. And he walks those drugs through the FDA approval process, which he completely controls from the bottom up. And then he gets them approved. And then in many cases, he himself profits. People within his agency can collect $150,000 a year from royalties on each of these products. And his agency, for example, in Moderna vaccine, his agency owns half of that vaccine, and they stand to make billions of dollars. Four of his top deputies, his loyalists, he was able to designate them to get margin rights for the patents. Well, those four men will collect $150,000 a year for life from a product they're supposed to be regulating. And, you know, what's happened is that the mercantile and commercial interests have overwhelmed that, the regulatory function at that agency, and it no longer does public health. It does pharmaceutical promotion. I'll tell you one last data point. Between 2009 and 2016, there were 240 new drugs approved by FDA, all of which came out of his shop. He is the incubator for the whole pharmaceutical industry.
And so what's interesting in the book is how the system that is set up to approve these drugs are all under the control of Anthony Fauci. And he has these things called what are PIs. And those are the, can you explain how that works or how he farms out?
So here's how he controls science globally. And this is how he was able to maintain this omerta, where every virologist in the world knew that the coronavirus was engineered. All you have to do is look at the genome. Everybody knew that, and they kept silent for a year. And here's how. He gives away $7.6 billion a year. That's two or three times what Gates gives away. When you take him and Gates, who work tandemly, they partner on everything. They talk together a couple of times a week. They are business partners, and they took a handshake deal, as I show in the book, in 2000 in Gates's library. The two of them got together and they formally formed a partnership with each other. But you take those two and one other guy, Jeremy Farrar, who is their other de facto partner, who was the head of the Wellcome Trust, which is the UK, the British version of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Between those three men, they control 61% of the biomedical research funding on Earth. So if you want to get your study funded, you got to go to those guys. And not only can they give you the money, but they also can kill a study because they control all of the other funding sources. They can kill a study, they can ruin your career, they can bankrupt colleges who do science that they don't want done. So they're able to really dictate virtually all the science on the globe. Here's how it works. This is just a schematic of typically what might happen. Tony Fauci develops a molecule in his lab that kills a virus. He's got it in his lab, tens of thousands of petri dishes and test tubes that have coronavirus, flu virus, dengue virus, Ebola virus, Zika virus, every virus that might affect human beings. He has scientists who are dropping different molecules on them to see if they kill them. If he finds a molecule that will kill the culture in that petri dish, he then gives it to a rat. And if the rats don't die, now he's got a drug. It's an antiviral that is usable in mammals because it will kill the virus, but it won't kill the mammal. Then he farms it out to the university. He gives it to what they call a PI or principal investigator. That's usually the dean of a department. It's a powerful guy at the university, at the medical school. He gives that guy does the phase one trial. So he's experimenting on animals and probably 100 human beings. For each of the humans that he recruits, he's a medical doctor. He brings in patients, persuades them to take part in this study. Tony Fauci's agency gives him $15,000 for every one of those patients. Yep. The university keeps 50% of that. So now they're also part of this process. And then if the drug gets through that phase one, then they have to go to phase two and phase three. So now they have to bring in 20,000, 30,000 people. They bring in a drug company as a partner, and they go through the phase two and phase three. And then at the end of it, they all split up the patent. So the drug company owns half. Tony Fauci gets part, his agency may get part of it. He and his cronies can each take little slivers of it, so they get paid for life. The university gets a piece of it. So now you have all the medical schools in the country that are now dependent on this income stream. And when you, and I'll tell you where you see the PIs, turn on CNN any night of the week, and you'll have these people who pretend to be independent experts. It's like Art Kaplan, Stanley Perlman, Peter Hotez, Paul Offit, all of the guys, virtually every one of them are not independent experts. That's what they're posing as. They'll say, they'll tell their university affiliation. What they're not telling you is that virtually all of them are living on Tony Fauci's largesse. So they're getting, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars in Tony Fauci. He is financing their careers. Now, when this drug goes to FDA to get it approved, it goes to a panel. Tony Fauci's always saying it's an independent panel who decides, you know, based upon real science, whether or not this drug is worthy of approval. It's not an independent science. They're virtually all his PIs or Gates' PIs. And those guys go sit on that panel for a year, and they know that they've got their own drugs back at Baylor University they're working on, or Berkeley or Columbia, that they know is going to be in front of that same panel next year. And they're all scratching each other's backs. And they approve that drug, and then they go off the panel, finish their drug, and then their drug goes in front of a panel that's similarly constituted and populated. And these PIs control the journals, they control the public debate, they're on TV all over the world, and these are the people that form the narrative that protect the orthodoxy. If you look at Tony Fauci as the Pope, the PIs are the cardinals and the bishops and the archbishops, and they're the ones that protect the orthodoxy, that make sure that the heretics get burned, that doctors who disagree get holed up and delicensed, that they get discredited, that they get gaslighted and vilified and marginalized. And they're the army that controls the narrative.
We all remember the story, because I reported it here, about how Rolling Stone had a dubious article that got picked up ubiquitously in the news media. And it was about how in Oklahoma, people couldn't get treatment in their emergency rooms because there were so many people showing up that were sick from taking ivermectin, the horse prescription ivermectin. So there's a a human version, and then there's a, just like there's a human version of penicillin. So they launched this fake story, and then it got picked up by everybody, and it turned out it was a completely bogus story. So how does something like this get suppressed? How would you explain? I understand how it happens, but how would you explain to somebody how studies like this that are printed and published at the NIH can somehow still get suppressed ubiquitously?
Well, you know, I don't want to go off into too big of a tangent, but there's two articles this week in The Defender, which is Children's Health Defense's newsletter, that specifically show that how the intelligence agencies now are manipulating three journals, and specifically one, The Daily Coast, two, The Daily Beast, and three, Rolling Stone, that with carefully planted individuals that, and this article is by Dick Russell, has been writing about the CIA for his entire career. I urge people to go and read it. And it talks specifically about that article by Rolling Stone, which was just a fraud. It was a complete fraud. What it said was that there was so many ivermectin people who were dying from ivermectin poisoning in Oklahoma hospitals, that gunshot victims were unable to get medical care. And then it showed a picture. This is how ridiculous this story is. It showed a picture of a long line of mainly black alleged gunshot victims who were waiting outside of this hospital. The ivermectin poisoning victims to clear a few beds so that some of these poor gunshot victims could get in. So if you even think about this, like, where did all these gunshot victims, there's 40 people in that line. Why didn't I hear of this massacre that occurred in Oklahoma where all these gunshot casualties were? But what they found later was that Rolling Stone had actually just taken a stock photo of a group of people lined up to get the vaccine 4 months earlier, and they had relabeled it with a caption that said, gunshot victims waiting for non-existent beds in hospitals. And then, the hospital itself, it was the subject of, it was very brazen fraud by Rolling Stone, because the hospital, they named the hospital, and the hospital came forward and said, we haven't seen a single poisoning victim from ivermectin in the entire state of Oklahoma. This is, it's just rank fraud. Rolling Stone never retracted it, and it spread all across the globe. As you say, it was in Newsweek, USA Today, all of the major ABC, NBC, CBS, all Rachel Maddow did a story on it. Nobody ever apologized. It just is, part of this extraordinary propaganda campaign that feels very, very like all of us are being manipulated. And if you read the last chapter of my book, Germ Games, it tells how that happened to in America. How did this, this vast lockstep manipulation occur, where all of the liberal democracies pivoted in an instant and performed a coup d'etat against democracy and constitutional governance and constitutional rights across the globe, which was baffling to most people. But if you read that chapter of the book, you'll understand how they did it.
And so are you surprised at the speed at which they were able to demonize questioning of that kind of authoritarianism? I mean, you're not allowed to be against lockdowns, even though there's tons of evidence that they're very bad for everybody's health, and they're bad in myriad ways. And now if you question it again, you're just demonized. You're the out of the cult, because you're asking a question. So I'm shocked at the people. See, because I grew up, I always thought I was a lefty, and lefties are supposed to be critical and suspicious of corporations, especially Big Pharma. And we know how corrupted government is. But for some reason, when Big Pharma and government come together, now everybody on the left is like, oh, look what beautiful babies they make. It's like, where is your skepticism? It just went out the window. How surprised were you about that?
First of all, I was not surprised at the the impulse, the sensor, because I've been basically telling the same story about other vaccines for 17 years. I've been heavily, heavily censored. I'm a pariah even before the pandemic in the liberal media. So I wasn't that surprised. What really shocks me, Jimmy, and I, the same as you, is that my political party, people from the left who are supposed to be doing critical thinking, who are supposed to, be suspicious of pharmaceuticals. Look, the four companies that make all the vaccines that are mandated for our children, Sanofi, Merck, Pfizer, and Glaxo, are serial felons. Those companies have paid $35 billion in the last 10 years for criminal penalties for and damages for lying to regulators, for defrauding science, falsifying science, for killing hundreds of thousands of Americans knowingly. They're the ones who started the opioid epidemic, which, Johnson & Johnson were right in the middle of that, which kills 56,000 kids, American kids a year. That's more kids, American kids, than were killed in the 20-year Vietnam War. And these people are enemies of our country. They're killing more people than the Viet Cong did during 20 years, and they're doing it for profit. And everybody knows they lie and cheat and steal about everything, that they are criminal enterprises. And the way they got, look, just take Vioxx. Vioxx, which was Merck's big blockbuster product, they killed between 100,000 and 500,000 Americans selling a headache pill that they knew caused heart attacks. They knew it from their clinical trials, but they hid it. And they let these Americans take this pill, and they did, most people who took that pill for headache or for arthritis, if they'd known that it could kill them with a heart attack, they would have probably said, you know what, I'll take an aspirin. But Merck didn't give them that choice. Merck told them this is safe and effective. And FDA said it's safe and effective when FDA knew that it was a lie. And so now, and they paid $7 billion, and they should have all gone to jail, but they didn't go to jail. And now, those same companies, the way they got caught in every case was that plaintiff's attorneys like myself, who specialize in pharmaceutical cases, we would sue them on behalf of an injured patient. We would obtain documents and discovery that illustrated criminal behavior, and then walk those documents down to the U.S. Attorney's Office and say, you should prosecute them. The only place that can ever happen is with vaccines, because you can't sue them. No matter how reckless they are, no matter how negligent they are, no matter how grievous your injury or death, you cannot sue that company. So you think, does it make any sense that the companies that behave this way with every other product, and when it comes to vaccines, where they know they can never get caught, suddenly they find Jesus and they're like, okay, this time we're gonna do everything right. And we know they're lying. Look what happened to Matty DeGarry. When Merck looked at, when it was trying to justify giving this to children, which is a complete crime, giving these, the Lancet just published this study by Johns Hopkins where the researchers could not find a single healthy child in our country who died from COVID. Why are we giving this to children? So in order to justify giving it to children, Merck gave it to only 1,100 kids between 11 and 15. They're going to give this to 76 million children, and they only put 1,100 kids in the study. Oh, and they found problems all across, but they said, oh, they're all minor problems. Well, one of the girls in that study, very brave 13-year-old girl, she joined the study because she believed in the vaccine, and her family did, and they wanted to, take the risk to save American children. She entered that study. She took the vaccine. She immediately got a fever. She got seizures. She is now in a wheelchair for life with neurological injuries, severe debilitating neurological injuries. She eats from a feeding tube. When we went back and looked at what did Merck say about this injury, Merck wrote that down as a stomach ache. So we know they're lying to us. And if one in 1,100 kids ends up in a wheelchair for life, if you extrapolate that to 76 million kids, you're going to have 76,000 kids who were healthy, who had no risk from COVID, who look like that. And, you know, these are the companies we're dealing with. What makes anybody, why does any liberal think it's okay to censor me? I mean, look, if I said, first of all, if I said something that is incorrect, my book is out there, 240,000 pages of words, 2,200 footnotes. Every factual allegation in that book is cited and sourced. I'm sure there's a mistake in there somewhere. There has to be. You can't do this without making at least one. But nobody has criticized it for a mistake. Nobody has said that I said something false. They're all attacking me, but it ad hominem attacks. So, but I should be able to speak. If I say something wrong, I promise you I'll correct it. I want to be told if I'm wrong about something. But even if I was saying things that were outright lies, the remedy is not to silence me in the United States of America. The remedy, as Oliver Wendell Holmes said, for bad speech or false speech is more speech. We know that democracy thrives, it flourishes, it survives only when there's a free flow of information where ideas and policies can triumph in the marketplace. And when you give big tech titans like Mark Zuckerberg, you know, and Bill Gates the capacity to censor Americans who are criticizing policies that are making them rich, look at this, think about this, all you liberals out there. Who is making, this has been the biggest transfer in wealth in history. This has been a war on the poor. We have destroyed Africa. In Compton, there were three times the amount of deaths as in Bel Air. All of the, you know, wealthy liberals are sitting at home with their kids who are computer literate and can do their class on Zoom. That the black people in this country, the poor people in this country, this has destroyed a million black or 60% of black businesses that have been destroyed. Someone with three generations of investment will never reopen again. You look at what this has done to the poor. It is an assault on the poor. And why is it that we think it's, and it has been the biggest shift in wealth in the history of the planet, $3.8 trillion from the poor to a tiny handful of billionaires. We've created 500 new billionaires from this lockdown, but the people who are really getting rich, Mark Zuckerberg, Sergey Brin from Google, Larry Ellison from Oracle, Bill Gates from Microsoft, Bloomberg, these are the people who are profiteering, war profiteers, on this pandemic and the lockdown, and they are the ones that are censoring people like me who criticize the lockdowns. Does that make sense to anybody that we should put them in charge of criticizing, of censoring criticism of government policies that are making them rich, making them billions every month? It makes no sense.
Well, I'm doing this on Rumble instead of YouTube because Google will censor me and deplatform me if I say something against their big pharma funders. And that's just a fact. I'm not allowed to say, in black and white, they've told me, you're not allowed to say ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine can treat COVID-19. You're not allowed to say it. And you're not allowed to say that the vaccines don't stop transmission. I'm not allowed to say that, even though those are facts.
If you can't say that, then they need to censor Boris Johnson and Mark Zuckerberg and, you know, and Rachel Walensky and everybody else, because they're all saying,
I agree
that the vaccines won't block transmission.
So can you just to drive it home, you're talking about vaccines for children. The infection fatality rate for children 5 to 9 is 0.001%, which they have a lower death rate from COVID than they do from the regular flu. And
by the way, virtually 100% of those deaths are in children with
comorbidities.
comorbidities. They can't find healthy children who died from COVID.
Right. So those are children who had cancer or something before, and then they got COVID and died.
Yeah.
So the New York Times says, for children without a serious medical condition, the danger of severe COVID is so low as to be difficult to quantify. The risk of long COVID among children, a source of fear among many parents, is also very low. According to the CDC, among children, the mortality risk from COVID-19 is actually lower than from the flu. There it is. And well, if you want to see the power of Pfizer's advertising money, here it is. Now, we just told you the facts about the risk of COVID to children. Let's watch NBC's doctor tell you what he thinks the risks are.
Let's bring in NBC senior medical correspondent, Dr. John Torres. Dr. Torres, good morning to you. As Kathy mentioned, that new poll finds about 2/3 of parents are hesitant to get their kids the shot. What is your advice to alleviate some of their concerns?
Now, 2/3 of parents don't want to give their kids the vaccine. So now they have a doctor from NBC come on and scare the hell out of those parents to see if they can get them to take it. Here's what he says.
And Joe, you're right. There is that hesitancy to get the shot, and it's a hesitancy that parents typically have because they're very protective of their child. A couple of things I tell them is, one, from a community perspective, you know, children right now are 25% of the cases that are out there. That's from a community perspective, but parents are more worried about their own child. So here are some numbers for their child. Last week, 118,000 children ended up with Pfizer. Since the pandemic, over 8,000 have been hospitalized, 1/3 of those in the ICU, and unfortunately, there have been 146,000 deaths, which according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, puts COVID now in the top 10 causes of death for children.
I mean, he's just making stuff up.
He's just making up. He's just, listen, I don't want to say this about people because it seems mean, but he is lying. He's just lying. And it's criminal that he would do that. You know, it is criminal, and it shows that, you know, how mercenary some of these, you know, what's happened to our television networks is they're now, you know, as you've shown on this show, which I saw, that they're all sponsored by Pfizer. That, you know,
yes,
Anderson Cooper makes $12 million a year, and probably $10 million of that comes from, you know, the drug company. So he's not working for CNN. He's working for pharma. And that's, you know, this doctor, they're all these venal, craven, mercenary liars who are preying on children.
Is brought to you by Pfizer.
CBS Health Watch, sponsored by Pfizer.
Anderson Cooper 360. Brought to you by Pfizer.
ABC News Nightline. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Making a difference. Brought to you by Pfizer.
CNN Tonight. Brought to you by Pfizer.
Early Start.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Friday night on Aaron Burnett Out Front.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
This Week with George Stephanopoulos is brought to you by Pfizer.
This weather report brought to you by Pfizer.
Today's countdown to the royal wedding is brought to you by Pfizer.
And now a CBS Sports Update brought to you by Pfizer.
Meet the Press data download brought to you by Pfizer.
So you get it. We could go out all day showing you that. And that's the power.
So Jimmy, those, you know, Pfizer, we shouldn't need to say this, but it should be said that Pfizer is paying those news sites to advertise the product, but it also is controlling content on those sites. And they are not allowed to criticize vaccines. They're not allowed to criticize pharmaceutical products. And they are being paid to promote pharmaceutical products. And they're doing that through direct promotion, but most through indirect promotion by drumming up fear, of infectious disease, and then telling us the only solution is vaccines.
They'll never mention vitamin D. They'll never tell you there's a therapy that works. They'll never talk about early treatment. They'll never tell you to get your zinc, your vitamin K, your vitamin D, monoclonals. They never talk about anything except vaccines. It's unbelievable. Do you have time to talk about when they say a vaccine is 100% effective? What does that mean when they say that?
Here's what it means. Pfizer was supposed to do a 4-year to 5-year study. It was supposed to end in 2023. They had to cut it off after 6 months because the vaccine had lost 100% of efficacy, essentially. They could no longer justify the vaccine if they let it keep going. So they had to unblind the study. They gave the vaccine to all the placebo group. They obliterated the placebo group. So we will never know what the long-term injuries are of this vaccine. We'll never be able to make that assessment. It's not science. This is just a fraud. Well, and here's what they did. They took the data from those 6 months, went to EPA, and they got the license. Pfizer's the only one who's got the license. Here's what the data showed. 22,000 people in the vaccine group, 22,000 roughly again in the placebo group. In the vaccine group, one person died from COVID of the 22,000 over 6 months. In the placebo group, two people died from COVID over 6 months of 22,000. What that means, was that allowed Pfizer to go to FDA and the American people and say, this vaccine is 100% effective because two is 100% of one. Most Americans, when they hear it's 100% effective, they believe what that means. They're thinking absolute risk instead of relative risk. It's, if I take that vaccine, I have a 100% chance of not dying from COVID. It's great. That's what people believe, but that's not what it means. What it means is, in order to save one person from dying from COVID, they have to give 22,000 people vaccines. Now, if you're going to do that, you got to make sure that none of those vaccines are going to kill anybody, because if one of them kills anybody, then you've canceled out the entire benefit of the program. So, but here, unfortunately, is what their own data show. And this you can look at my first chapter in my book, their table S4 is there with the explanations. And that table shows in the placebo group, there were 14,000 deaths of the 22,000 people over 6 months. In the vaccine group, there were 20 deaths of the 22,000. So that means that if you get the vaccine, you are 48% more likely to die over the next 6 months than if you don't. That's called all-cause mortality. What were they dying of? As it turns out, almost all of the excess deaths were heart attacks. So in the vaccine group, there were 5 fatal heart attacks over 6 months. In the placebo group, only one. What that means is if you get that vaccine, you're 500% more likely to die of a heart attack over the next 6 months. And it also means that for every life that they save from COVID, they are killing poor people from heart attacks. And we are seeing these heart attacks in the post-licensing surveillance system in VAERS, in the British system, National Health System has found 25% rise in fatal heart attacks in Scotland since the rollout of the vaccines. We're seeing in our country these death rates from this vaccine that are unprecedented, more deaths associated reported to VAERS over the last 10 months, then 20,000 deaths, more than all the deaths from every billions of vaccines combined over 33 years.
So when do you think that America will ever wake up to this?
Well, I don't make predictions, but I think we need people out like you out there, Jimmy, and more and more people who are talking to bigger and bigger audiences. You know, I think that the real question is, we're in an arms race right now because there's a huge conversion rate where people are waking up and coming over to our side. The problem is that they are putting in place this kind of turnkey totalitarianism. These surveillance systems, the facial recognition systems, the digital currencies, the satellite surveillance. Bill Gates says he's going to be able to look at every square inch of the earth 24 hours a day. And all of those, and the vaccine passports, et cetera, and all of those instrumentalities will allow the ultimate ambition of every totalitarian state in the world, which is complete control of all of humanity 24 hours a day, all your conduct, all your interactions, all your transactions. And at some point, public resistance will become irrelevant. And we're already seeing this in Europe, where you're seeing, you know, the lights are going out all over Europe and Australia. You're seeing Australia is virtually in civil war right now. There's concentration camps. There's rioting in the streets every night. and you never hear anything about it in the mainstream media. There's a million people demonstrating in Vienna, in Austria, and no word of it in the mainstream media. So, you know, if they're able to hide it from us, it didn't happen. And at some point, you get so much, they get so much control, potential for control. You know, even in Nazi Germany, you could swim across the Rhine, you could climb across the Alps, you could hide in an attic under the Stasi in East Germany and the Communist Germany. You could go across the wall, and you had an 80% chance of dying, but you had a 20% chance of, so you could get away. Now there's no way we're to run, Jimmy. They are going to be able to control everything, and we have to build our movement faster than they put those that turnkey totalitarianism in place. That is the arms race that's occurring right now.
How do we resist? Because the problem is
every day, everybody's got to do 3 civil disobediences a day. And that means talk to somebody you wouldn't talk to. Talk to a mother you see on the street who has a couple of her kids with her and say, listen, before you vaccinate those kids, do your own research. Don't trust the government. Don't trust Tony Fauci. Have the conversation. The way that totalitarianism works is they have to give you the big lie. And this is what Goebbels said. The reason they wanted a big lie is because it's much more resilient than a little lie. If you using fear and constant persuasion, propaganda, you can get people to swallow a big lie. They do not want to let it go. Mark Twain said, it's much easier to fool somebody than to persuade them that they've been fooled. So once you fool them, they're going to hold on to it. But the way that the propaganda works is that they have to hear the lie 5 times. And the first 4 times, they'll dismiss it. The 5th time, they'll buy it. But what we need is to tell them the truth 5 times to every single person. And we don't have, they own the media, they own the modes of communication, they own the social media, they own the mainstream media, the legacy media. We don't have access to those traditional institutions, and we need to use guerrilla advertising. That means all of us have to be, you know, instruments of conversion. The conversions that are taking place are always from their side to our side. Nobody ever goes back into the matrix. When we let in the light, they stay with us and they become our soldiers. And one of the things you can do is buy my book. I make no money on this book. It all goes back to our litigation program at Children's Health Defense. Buy the book, give it to people who need to read it, not necessarily people who want to read it, but people, the school district commissioners, the principal of the school, the nurses, the local hospital, give it to them. Most importantly, go to CHD's website and go to our sticker program. We make stickers, templates for stickers that we will give to you for free. And you go to Kinko's or Staples and you get that paper that's sticky on one side, put it in your printer, print out 20 stickers a day on one piece of paper. And as you go through your day, you go to the restroom, public restrooms, places where it's legal, where there's high pedestrian traffic, put up those informational stickers. And that way, we'll start saturating the environment with contrary messages, with contrary to the narrative. And that's what we need to do. We all need to be working. You know, if you have if there's a merchant in your town who's got an all vax only sign up, tell him, I'm not vaccinated, I'm not going to shop here, and I'm going to tell my friends not to. That's a civil disobedience. All of these things are civil disobediences. We need to fight against this, you know, this rise of totalitarianism where they're going to take everything away from us. Jimmy, I got to go. I got a podcast. I'd like to stay with you all day. And thank you for having me. And I hope you'll have me back sometime.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much. And thanks for writing this book. It's an amazing book. And I'm giving it away as a Christmas gift to everybody I know. And this will open your eyes and you'll never be the same again. Thanks so much, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., for writing the book and for coming on and talking. And I hope you come back soon. We'd love to talk to you more. There's much more to talk about. Programmable money, Operation 201, all that stuff we didn't get to. So it's all important that people don't realize it's actually going to affect them. Thank you so much. Everybody come see our live stand-up shows. We're coming to Raleigh, North Carolina at the end of January and Philadelphia in February. See you there.